You ever get the feeling that everything in America is completely f***ed up?
They're saying I shouldn't think stuff like this. They're saying
something is wrong with me.
How did you get to be so cynical?
Practice.
Welcome to episode 10 of Positive Cynicism. I am your host, Chad Smart. You can find me on Twitter at Chad Smart. I try to keep things simple. It's the least I can do. It's been a couple weeks since the last episode dropped, and I think the show is kind of switching to an every other week format just due to some scheduling conflicts on my part and also, just trying to come up with a topic every week is proving a little harder than expected. This week's episode, however, has been in the works since the show was conceived, and I have been looking forward to getting this episode out. We're tying it in, we're releasing it this week due to the upcoming release of Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2. The episode is all about fandom and what drives people to have such an emotional connection to various topics. So I bring in a friend of mine who is probably the biggest fanboy, and I say fanboy in the nicest of terms. I don't mean it as a derogatory insult, but Eric is just very big into comic books, movies, sports. You'll find out more in the interview, but I think this is a really interesting interview, and I know we're kind of treading on the Nerd United ground here, but I don't think Greg Mahochko will mind. And by the way, give Greg's latest podcast over at Nerd United a listen, as he is the founder of Jittery Monkey Podcast and writes my paychecks, so keep him happy. But this episode is an interesting aspect, and I think this is also a part one of a future ongoing series, because this is a topic that I'm very much interested in, and it's one that we can talk about without probably engaging in too much negative discussion. But I'm just very interested in trying to figure out what drives fandom and why I don't have that fandom. So after this break, we'll be back with Eric, and you can let me know what you think. Leave a comment on the Facebook page, or like I said, hit me up on Twitter at Chad Smart.
Hi, this is Greg Mahochko, the co-founder of the Jittery Monkey Podcast Network and host of the Nerds United Podcast. And what will you hear on the Nerds United Podcast? Well, you'll hear conversations with me and artists or writers, creators of comic books. You'll hear panel discussions from some various regional comic cons. You'll hear cosplay. You'll have celebrity interviews. It all happens here on Nerds United. You never know what to expect. Sometimes you might just get into a half hour of me rambling aimlessly, sometimes with a little aim, kind of like guys in the urinals. And never mind. But you'll get some ramblings of me, my thoughts, and maybe even some suggestions on some books to read, pick up at your local comic book store. That's where it all starts, your local comic book store. So head on over there, grab a handful of comics, and put on Nerds United, either in the car or while you're reading, and enjoy the show.
All right, as I discussed in that intro, we are discussing fandom here on Positive Cynicism. And I am joined by probably my friend who's the biggest fan person that I know, Eric Bennett. And he is, I don't know, when I first met Eric, I think we've known each other about 7 years now.
Yeah,
7 or 8 years.
Sounds right.
Eric organizes outings to opening night movie screenings, parties at his house with movies. He's got one whole room that is a collectible room. And I'm often amazed by Eric's fandom and passion for the comic book and just the geek culture. So I guess the first question is, how long have you been into your fandom? How do you describe your fandom? and let's go from there.
Yeah, well, I think we might have a similar story on this. Like, for me, it was 1977, like probably millions or tens of millions of kids, where I was at that magic age watching Star Wars. I vaguely remember thousands of people wrapping around a block somewhere in California. And within 5 seconds when the Death Star, not the Death Star, the Star Destroyer rolls out, my mind was blown. And I think that planted the seed for me even wanting to be in a movie or play like I was in a movie like everybody else. So I don't think I've even recovered from 77. And then if you look at, and we can go into this later, all the other stuff that happens around that time, Superman, Jaws, kind of the dawn of the blockbuster, I've just been hit with all these seismic pop culture moments. So my fandom smack dab 1977 Star Wars, okay. May, whatever it was.
And I can relate because Star Wars was the first movie I ever saw at a theater. I saw it at a drive-in theater. The last movie I saw at that drive-in theater was Star Wars Special Edition. I was like a bookend. And I'm the same way. Like, that's what got me interested in entertainment industry. And I was a Star Wars geek all through childhood, through college. I remember when they started re-releasing the action figures around 95.
Yeah.
Collected them. Had to get the variations, you know. One whole wall of my college apartment was covered in action figures. I don't know how I managed to have a girlfriend at this time.
Yeah, I was going to ask about that.
Notice I don't have her now.
Oh, man.
Oh. Yeah, and I've got... let's go with Star Wars here since we're talking about it. I also have a tattoo of Han Solo on a Tauntaun.
And that's, I like it.
That's how bad my fandom was. I even enjoyed the prequels the first time that I saw them.
Okay.
But I think that was more about the experience in a theater with friends, you know, sharing this thing. Like, we grew up Star Wars fans, and now you've got the new ones coming out. So you're kind of blind, the blind loyalty to it.
Yeah.
Fast forward now another 20 years. We're old. But there's a new Star Wars movie coming out this December.
Yeah, seemingly every year or every 6 months, about, whatever it is.
I will see it, but I'm not interested in it. I haven't watched the trailer. I didn't watch any of the Star Wars Celebration footage. What is your take now with the current Star Wars universe?
Well, I mean, the easy answer, and it's the truest answer, is that it's nostalgia. So we're all, I think, in the Star Wars fan, there's different types of fandom, we can get into that too, but with Star Wars, it's kind of like getting a piece of what happened in 77 or in 80 or 83. So these movies are obviously playing off of that. They're giving you images of that, moments of that. The themes are kind of similar. So new fans, I think, are having a really exciting experience if they're just starting from 7 on up, and then they can watch the old ones and see where it came from. That's probably the best for them. For me, it's like I'm getting 10-20% of what I used to get. But what I got in 77 and all those other older movies was so, again, seismic and so off the charts that if I can get a chunk of that and relive a little bit of my youth and those magic years of seeing that, I think that's why all the older guys like me are going to see this stuff. It's just to get a little taste of it. If you have a kid, you hand it off to them. It's really, these movies are for kids. So it's kind of like you becoming a kid. It's like going to Disneyland once a year. Like, the reason you're on a ride with Goofy or Dumbo, you're like going back to when you were 7 and you first went to Disneyland, or 8 or 9. It's reliving some of that. So these movies are constantly injecting you with a little shot of the past. And I think for new fans, it's a totally different experience. I don't exactly know what they're getting because we're not biased, but we have these previous memories that are, these are all stacking. And when we watch it, we're viewing it through, well, now there's 8 of these, and you're calculating where this is going and what they're borrowing or being an original on, or what they're coming up with that's slightly new. New fans, this is all new to them. So I think it's most exciting for them. And for me, I'm just getting a little percentage of what I used to have. So I'm always going to want that shot. Until I guess I'm numb to it. I'm not numb to it yet.
Yeah, I was gonna say, given episode 7, Force Awakens, my reaction to it was, it was too much like, it was a retelling of A New Hope.
Yeah.
Do you think that maybe they're trying too hard to recreate the past experience without creating something new, just because they know that the fandom is there, so
absolutely,
they don't have to try hard?
Absolutely, and I think that's the biggest problem with that movie. And it's well acknowledged. You watch it, it's got another Death Star in it. It's got another you know, Jedi to be stuck on a desert planet wanting to do something else with her life. I'm really hoping the new one doesn't become Empire Strikes Back, and that's what it looks like in the trailer. I know you haven't seen the trailer.
I haven't seen the trailer yet.
But to kind of see the Resistance getting their ass kicked, and these dark tones, like, they can't... The first one, I get it, because I think they acquired Lucasfilm for $5 billion. And even though I don't like the fact that it's cloning a lot of the original movie, it's a big investment, and they need to have a new audience accepted. The old fans are going to show up anyway. So it's a huge problem with the movie that it's cribbing so much off the original. But given the amount of money they spent, the amount of new fans, where the franchise was dead in the water, Lucas wasn't doing it anymore. I get why they did it. It didn't pay off as far as an original movie. And I'm only hoping that 8 starts something a little bit fresher.
Yeah.
Because 7 wasn't it. 7 was not a complete reboot. It was a clone. And frankly, the whole stuff with them assaulting the Death Star was boring. You know, and we can talk about other things that are wrong with the movie, unless you don't want the whole podcast to be about that movie. But I still enjoyed it because Daisy Ridley and the whole shot of nostalgia and all that made it off the charts for me. I still love that movie, even though I have a lot of problems with it.
Okay. Yeah, I said after watching it, again, I wasn't impressed because I thought it was too much of a retelling, but mm-hmm. I was anxious to see what they do with episodes 8 and 9. Yeah. I want to see the full story. And that's another issue, and this is probably going to tangent into a discussion on Hollywood films, is no film is made as a standalone anymore. Mm-mm. Everything is made as there's going to be a sequel. It's usually going to be a trilogy, and then they'll either reboot or restart a new trilogy.
Yeah.
And speaking of which, part of the reason why we're doing this podcast this week is the release of Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2.
Yeah.
And this is the Marvel movie 18 or 19 in their cinematic universe, somewhere around there.
Yeah.
But you always know that at the end of it, there's going to be a teaser for the next Marvel movie. And I probably should have done some homework and looked up Marvel's schedule. And you probably may be able to find out.
Yeah, I know some of it.
Because I believe Thor 2 comes out this year as well.
Yeah, November.
In November. And then Avengers 3 is next year.
Next year, I think Spider-Man's coming out in July.
Which is now tying into the Marvel universe.
Yeah.
And that's that. So in the Marvel, let's take Marvel for the example. What is the fandom? Because I know you're also a big comic book.
Yeah.
Okay. So, and I believe you actually read Guardians of the Galaxy, or were familiar with it before
movie? I have like 3 or 4 Rocket Raccoon comics, and they're bad. So the reputation of that series, that it was a failed series, they don't read very well. The art isn't great. So it's a major miracle that James Gunn turned something like this into something Star Wars number-wise. So this is kind of an anomaly. Like, that's how successful Marvel is. They're taking characters that nobody really bought back in the day, mm-hmm. and they're turning them into household names. And kids are walking around with lunch pails with Groot and Rocket Raccoon, and that comic wasn't even good.
Yeah.
So it's pretty amazing stuff.
Well, that's something I've read about the Marvel movies to begin with, is they're popular characters, Spider-Man, Fantastic Four, X-Men, I guess to an extent, were hit films, but those were expected to be hit films because everybody was familiar with them.
Exactly.
Whereas when they started putting together the Avengers, with the exception of the Hulk, who even the Hulk movies were probably the weakest of the setup for the Avengers.
That hurts me. It's my favorite character. I have a huge statue of him. He's my number one guy.
I'm just saying the Edward Norton film, the Eric Bana film.
They never caught on.
Yeah. I think those were actually pre-MCU.
Yeah.
And that might have been a difference.
Yeah, I think Universal did one.
Mm-hmm.
I think a couple different studios did, or maybe Universal did all of them, but they kept firing whoever was playing the Hulk, and then Norton had these problems with... He had his own editor, and then the guy that directed the Hulk had his own editor, and they were fighting, and they had separate rooms, and they never got it together for the Hulk.
But they've gotten it with Mark Ruffalo.
Oh, yeah.
Fantastic. Yeah. Now they've made Iron Man, who was not a popular character, very popular.
Yeah.
Captain America has done well. Thor, again, these are characters that... They're not as obscure as Rocket Raccoon.
Exactly.
But they also weren't... You look at the DC side, where they have all the top, you know, Batman, Superman, Wonder Woman, and they can't seem to make a good franchise piece.
No, not at all. Farthest from it.
So what is in your opinion, what is Marvel doing correctly? And is it just because they actually have a timeline, they know how many films they're going to be releasing, and not looking at box office, let's say, and then deciding what to do next. Like, they already have their game plan.
Yeah, well, I think Marvel got really lucky landing Raimi for Spider-Man because Sony kind of botched the newest ones. Yeah. So I think what happened with DC and Marvel is kind of random. Like, I think Marvel lucked into it with filmmakers. They hit total gold with Iron Man, and they hit gold with Spider-Man. So early on, they got some good directors, they got some good scripts, some good actors, and it worked. DC has been floundering because outside of Nolan, they can't seem to get a decent script together. They're making a lot of money, but they haven't had those early successes. They're building off of Zack Snyder. Mm-hmm. So there's this foundation. Nolan's out of the game. And DC, they haven't found their groove. Like, they haven't found even one, two, or three movies that everyone kind of widely likes. Whereas Marvel, for whatever reason, got lucky early on. They made some X-movies I didn't like. They've screwed up every Fantastic Four. So Marvel's failed in various ways, even though Marvel Studios and Disney has it right. The other studios that they've lent their characters to don't always do them well. But I think Marvel, ever since they got that footing, and then they were able to acquire their own talent base and to have their own studios, now they're working with Disney, or they're owned by Disney. Disney knows how to make movies. They know through focus testing what 4-year-olds are going to like in a superhero movie, all the way up to guys as old as me, up to 80. Does DC have that? I mean, DC, I believe, is just loaning out their characters to other studios, or Warner Brothers. So until DC has any kind of a track record where they can stick to it and they can get better talent in to make their movies, they're going to be struggling as far as creative standpoint. But financially, they're doing really well. But I think Marvel just got lucky. And once they were able to control stuff from a creative standpoint, they knew that they could make comic books into movies. They could say, if you stick with this 18 movies through, they're all going to interlink. This is something that hasn't been done before as far as films, as far as I know. This isn't just a serial. Mm-hmm. This is like, if you watch Iron Man's going to be in a Spider-Man movie. What's he doing in there? Well, it's because he might be dealing with Thanos. What's Thanos? Well, Thanos was in the Guardians movie. Thanos was in a Thor movie. We really haven't had these interlocking things, and DC's crudely trying to do that. But Marvel, I think, just early on got lucky and had enough success to where they can get enough money to have creative control, and now that the studios determine their characters.
Now, my biggest criticism of the Marvel films is I always feel at the end of the film, you're back to square one where you were at the beginning of the film. There's no consequence in the film. Mm-hmm. The bad guy is not defeated, but he's beaten, but he's not defeated. Mm-hmm. He's going to come back eventually. Spoiler for anyone who hasn't seen Civil War. Is it Falcon? Not Falcon. War Machine.
Yeah.
Nosedives into, crashes into the ground, and he's like, oh, I can't feel my legs. And you're like, oh my gosh, they're actually hurting someone. And then the next scene, it's like I think there's dialogue where they say, oh, we've got this new, operation or whatever that will give him back
new
his
technology
legs.
To get him fixed.
But I remember even with the X-Men Days of Future Past movie where a friend of mine saw it and he's like, oh my gosh, I can't believe they were killing off X-Men. And so I go in, I'm like, oh my gosh, they're actually killing people. But then you find out, well, they kill them, but since they know one of the X-Men goes back in time
in an alternate future
and it saves everybody, so there's no consequence to the action. And to me, that takes me out of the film from investing emotionally.
Yeah, well, in a sense, these films are the truest embodiment of the comics. So when you make a comic book, you're relying on all these kids buying these comic books to follow Iron Man, his buddies, and then your favorite villains. So going to DC, Batman's not going to really kill the Joker. Superman's not really going to die when he fights Doomsday. They can't. These comic movies, there isn't a lot of inherent danger because they're not going to kill them off in the comics. So they're just doing what's in the comics. And that's been my biggest kind of, when I advocate for these movies, it's because when I read the comics, they just play out like that. Mm-hmm. Now, I think cinema fans, and you're probably in this category, and it's a reasonable argument, show up and go, well, I keep seeing the same thing. The story continues. It doesn't seem to end. There's nothing overly threatening. Well, they're just following the literature. Yeah. They're not going to deviate and say, well, we're just going to kill off Tony Stark. You're not going to see another movie from him again. First of all, financially, it would make no sense.
Yeah.
It's not true to the comics. The villains need to persist to play off the protagonist. So I can see how dramatically it can be uninteresting to someone who's not a fan. That's why I think these things are fan movies first, but they've hit this mainstream, and the mainstream is trying to cope with, why am I seeing four of these a year, five of these a year? Well, guess what? I have 4,000 comics. There's a lot more that they can do. And that might bother you or bother other people, but there's a dang good reason why they're continuing this. It's because it works and it follows the comics. So in that sense, they're being about as true as you can get to what's in the comics.
That's a valid point. And I think for me, it's like, I'm thinking back to the old Batman, the Adam West serial, you know, where Joker, Penguin, Riddler, Catwoman would all come in and out various episodes. And of course, yeah, you're not going to kill anybody because you have to save them for a future installment. And I think maybe that's one of the problems with Tim Burton's Batman is they killed the Joker. So what do you do next?
Yeah.
And granted, they went through, you know, that that lineup of 90s Batman movies went through each movie, had a distinct Batman villain. But then you can't bring them back later.
Yeah, and some very, I think, lower tier villains. Like, and I'll make a controversial statement. No one agrees with me. I don't like Tim Burton's Batman at all. I didn't like it. Was it 88 when it came out? Or everybody in the world loved that movie. The merchandising was sky high.
Yeah.
Superhero movies weren't being done at the time. They were dead in the water. I saw that and I was like, we're right back to the Roger Corman Fantastic Four and silly depictions. It's totally campy. The Joker is overweight, short, nothing like the comics, nothing like the 66 series. So even I was, 18 at the time when that came out, I knew instantly, minute by minute, this was going downhill for me. And then all the sequels were just got worse. I mean, Arnold Schwarzenegger was in them.
Yeah.
Jim Carrey was just atrocious as the Riddler. So yeah, I'm not even a fan of the Burton one, but I get a lot of arguments with people about that, but I can refute most of it.
No,
it's just an awful, campy take on Batman. And Batman's not a campy character. If you go to his origins, he's a detective. It's noir. It's violent. It gets more violent as the series gets through the 70s and 80s. And to make it to where everything's neon colored and a big joke and funny, and then Michael Keaton in that role is just, didn't work for me. Not at all.
I liked Keaton as Batman. And as someone who hadn't read Batman comics and was only familiar with the TV show, basically.
Yeah.
I thought it was an acceptable movie at the time. Mm. Again, being 14.
Yeah.
You know, looking back on it now, yeah, you can spot the flaws, and I think most of it begins and ends with Robert Wool.
Who was he?
He was the reporter.
Oh.
The guy who somehow had a career throughout the 80s and early 90s and like 10 seasons of Arliss. Yeah. Yeah. All right, let's look at those movies that were being made after the success of Batman. Because then you had Spawn, you had Blade, you had these comic book movies that weren't based on popular.
Except Spawn was pretty popular.
Spawn was popular at the time, and I believe had the.
But Blade, I didn't even hear of when it came out. I stopped collecting at that point.
Okay,
but I did like the movie.
But it seems interesting to look back and say the studios were making, instead of Marvel jumping on Fantastic Four, Spider-Man. I know James Cameron had been working on a Spider-Man film.
Yeah.
Which, right. I don't know if you've ever read his script. It's, in my opinion, atrocious.
Oh.
Just backs up my opinion that James Cameron is not a writer.
No, he's not a very good writer.
No. But it's interesting that studios weren't making popular, you know, weren't taking Daredevil, Hulk, which had been a popular TV show, Wonder Woman, and instead going for these. Maybe they were trying to do more low-budget stuff and just thinking that it would be easier.
That's what I think it is, because I don't have all this on a timeline, but just going off my somewhat faulty memory, the technology never caught up to the ambition of Marvel. So when you do an Iron Man, and especially if you do a Hulk, that CGI or whatever they're using has to be so far in the timeline to even be attempted in a credible way. That's why you get a lot of superheroes like Blade wearing a leather jacket, or you get a Batman who wears a suit, or... And I believe me, when I watch some of those movies, they feel cheap. Like, even though the budgets may be inflated because maybe Jack Nicholson wanted $30 million or whatever it was, they feel like they're shot on a Warner backlot, and there's only a few locations at times, and they're going with superheroes that are not really... Batman's not a superhero. So I do want to say retrospectively that I have to thank Burton's Batman for kicking off another generation of superhero fans, Because no matter how cheesy I think they get at times, and this goes back to the larger thing about fandom, fandom isn't going to survive with me. Mm-hmm. I'm some weirdo who keeps showing up to conventions in his 40s. But when I go to conventions, I see little kids dressed as Batman, bingo, that's what they got right. So the kids have to grow up, brainwash their kids into Star Wars or Marvel. And I enjoy just watching that change over all the time, because it's like, I like the joy of those new fans being created. The old fans, we're just stuck in this nostalgic loop. You know, like, I'm going to devour this stuff because I have 4,000 comics. I'm going to devour it because I watched all the blockbusters in the 70s and 80s. They have me. Hmm. But do they interest, does it work on a 5-year-old? Does it work on a 7-year-old? Maybe these new Star Wars movies may bore them. We don't know yet, you know, to see if they actually grow up and hand this, you know, to their kids.
Yeah. That's a good point. Okay, now let's go with that. With your fandom, you're saying is nostalgia.
Yeah, different, yeah.
But your fandom, from what I know of you and see, you still have that fandom. Like, when Star Wars came out for me, it was when Force Awakens came out. Yes, it was going and seeing, like, okay, I want to see Chewbacca. I want to see R2-D2 and mm-hmm. C-3PO. But your fandom persists throughout the year with all your different things. How do you... how do you keep up with your... Why hasn't your fandom diminished over time, do you think?
Yeah, it's a good question. I mean, I think the convention scene, which has exploded in the last decade, I would say there was a singularity with Iron Man in 2008 at the Comic-Con, where you could go there. I won't go too much on the Comic-Con. We can say that for another time, but... you could show up to any convention. There might be people there. San Diego was always getting pretty big, even at that time. But then it became red carpet, and then it became gigantic. And then all of a sudden, I started going to conventions just to see what was going on, and I'd be reinvigorated. And a lot of it has to do with socializing. So this is one thing I think that's left out of fans or nerds or geeks or whatever culture you want to call it, is that when we go to the conventions, we're meeting people. These people I share hotel rooms with now. Mm-hmm. So maybe when you guys go to these hockey sporting events, you meet other hockey fans and you do their podcasts and... You start networking. So for me, my friend list kind of keeps growing based on people that have similar interests or nostalgia, or maybe newer fans. Like, we meet kids there and we see them the next year at the Comic-Con mm-hmm. and see their dads and moms. We talk to them. So even when I'm sleeping on the pavement or sleeping overnight for a Star Wars thing, what's reinvigorating is I'm talking to people at 3 a.m. about everything that we've seen throughout our life. They'll give me a graphic novel and I'll start reading it with my cell phone light. So all that stuff is kind of left out of the conversation. All those experiences... It's fun to travel. It's fun to have a nice hotel room. It's fun to eat out. Fun to have beers. Go to podcasts. All these little things. So the reason that my fandom kind of keeps persisting is that I keep getting shots of it throughout the year. Whereas, I guess if I could kind of stuck around and said, well, I'll just check out 3 Marvel movies a year and a Star Wars movie. This might be where you're at. Mm-hmm. It may not be that big of a deal, because if you take those single events, it's a couple hours here, a couple hours there. But when I go to these things, it's a travel thing, it's a socializing thing. And to meet people that have similar interests in the thousands, tens of thousands, 130,000, mm-hmm. that energy that you get, even standing, so these lines are ridiculous. You stand these lines for movie premieres, you stand the lines at the conventions, but all the conversation you have with people, and then maybe a filmmaker walks by and talks to you. Maybe, for me, I'll meet my favorite comic artists. There's not even a line for some of these artists that are, you know, older than me, 60, 70. And then they do a sketch for me. That'll make 3 months. That's another shot of fandom for me. And if I kind of get bored of the convention scene, I'm also a gamer. So I'm constantly on the video game scene, watching trailers for the new games, watching people blog about it. I'm playing them. I'm also into virtual reality. So I think it would be hard to sustain fandom if it was just like you're a Star Wars fan. Mm-hmm. But what do you do every year? You go to one or two conventions that are Star Wars related, and you wait to see a movie, and you put all your hopes, and it's kind of a silly ratio. Like, they're only putting out a couple hours a year, and then you're going to, like, sweat over every little detail. Well, I'm doing that, but I'm also following 100 other projects. Mm-hmm. So for me, my fandom is everywhere. It's gaming. I still collect comic books. I'm a collector of statues and figures. There's people that are just into, like, Funko dolls. Yep. I think I would get a little bored if I just was myopic and I was just into one thing. And sometimes I do meet these people at the conventions, and they'll talk your ear off about one particular strain of what they're into. I think for me to sustain my fandom, I kind of got to be firing in different directions to keep it fresh. Otherwise, I would probably burn out if I was one type of fan. So my fandom is all over the place. It's extensive. It used to be in the NBA with sports. And maybe that died away and this other pop culture thing sprung up. But my fandom is probably in five or six different areas at all times, all throughout the month. And that goes to actually traveling places too.
Yeah, and that's interesting because as you were talking, I was thinking, you know, part of my fandom is professional wrestling.
Mm-hmm.
Kevin, who hosts the My 1-2-3 Cents podcast here on the Jittery Monkey Podcasting Network, cheap plug, we've been to 9 of the last 11 WrestleManias.
Oh, wow.
But it's different for us because, and this is where I'm probably going to get myself in trouble with anybody listening who's a wrestling fan. We go to these films, and we've met people at events that have come back here, you know, either the next year or a couple years.
It's fun.
And we've stayed in touch with them. We're friends through Facebook and stuff. But talking to wrestling fans can sometimes be really, like, painful for me.
Yeah.
And so we don't have that socializing aspect when we go to WrestleMania because we'll hang out a little bit, but we kind of keep to ourselves. Plus, we're both kind of introverts, you know, shy people when we get in public anyway. But it's interesting to hear you talk about Comic-Con. And again, we hope to have a Comic-Con themed episode coming up in July when it gets closer. But yes, when you're around, you know, 50,000 people and standing in line, which is the other thing, I guess WrestleMania, we don't actually stand in line for events. So you don't have the talking. But yes, when you can share the experience. And I think that's what fandom comes, one of the biggest aspects of fandom is sharing that experience.
I think that's, you hit the nail on the head. I think if fandom is done right, it should be shared.
Yeah.
It's not, you don't exist in a vacuum as a fan. You know, you're linking up with a lot of other people that have, well, hopefully you can. Like if I was a baseball fan and I just had season tickets and I got a seat and I just watched the Dodgers play every, what is that? I mean, you probably want to go with a friend and maybe go in maybe at work with a bunch of different people. Otherwise, how would you sustain your interest? You'd be having this Groundhog Day, where when I go to these conventions or I go to movie premieres. So, for example, last night I threw a Guardians of the Galaxy party, and we had 14 of us, you know, at the house with the two pit bulls, and I bought 3D glasses for everybody, and we just laughed and clapped all night at the movie. That's what it's about. So that's the energy going into Guardians of the Galaxy 2, and I have 18 of us going to that. So I try to get big groups together. Those people pick me up when I'm like, why am I doing all this? Mm-hmm. I have those thoughts at times when I'm sleeping at a convention or in a big line. Oh, I know why, because I'm having all these fun conversations with people. So it's, to me, it is about sharing.
You know? Yeah, I've not gone to Comic-Con in the last 2 years.
Mm.
And
that's right.
Yeah, most of my time, because I go to Comic-Con, I've been, I believe, 5 times now.
Okay.
And before I went to Comic-Con, I would say, oh yeah, I'm a geek. You know, I know film and familiar with comic books, whatever. Mm-hmm. I go to Comic-Con, and the story that I often tell is, I think the second year that I went, I was with a friend of mine who used to work for the company that owns Voltron.
Okay.
And so he was hanging out with him, and he wanted to go because he'd put on a Voltron panel earlier in the day, and then he wanted to hear Ray Bradbury speak.
Oh yeah.
And so the panel before that was Green Lantern comic book panel.
Oh, for the movie?
Not for the movie, just for the comic book, like comic books.
Okay, well, and you got lucky.
And I've read Green Lantern comic books, I'm familiar with them.
Yeah.
But sitting in that panel, listening to the fans ask the questions, I'm like, I know what each of these words mean individually, but when you put them in a sentence, I am so lost. And so I realized, like, my geekdom is not that high. So Comic-Con for me is about the experience. And so that's why when you go down and, you know, Sean comes back, or, you know, he's coming back this year from Australia.
Yeah, he's gone.
Sean can be seen on episode 4, I think, of Positive Cynicism. You can listen to him talk about moving to Australia. But he and his wife are coming back. I believe Mike, who was on episode 2, is going down.
Yeah.
And it's just when I've been asked, like last year when you guys were going down, I was like, oh, I wanted to go. It was because you guys are having that shared experience that I won't have now. And I'll just have to live vicariously through you.
Why not? Why not go down there?
Well, because I didn't have a pass. I just hadn't bought a pass.
There's a lot of stuff you can do even if you don't have a pass.
Which is, I think, because Comic-Con has grown so big, there is so much outdoors now. And there are I mean, if you want a pass, there are ways to obtain them.
Yep.
But yeah, it's so getting back to fandom being social, it is, I mean, because you can go online, you can find message boards, you can find all types of,
yeah,
you know, interactions. And even, I think, in different cities, areas of the country, whatever, you can find groups of people, like what you do, who will just meet up and be like, okay, this movie's coming out, let's go do this. Mm-hmm. Let's, you know, there's an art exhibit on Ralph McQuarrie art or whatever. Let's all go.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a point that I'm trying to get here with this, and I don't really know what it is right now.
What were you going to say?
Oh, go ahead.
Well, I think that that's the part that's grown. So, like, I used to go... I've gone to conventions by myself. I did that in Seattle recently. And I found myself there maybe an hour or two, and it was not the same. And sometimes when you go to these things, sometimes when I buy collectibles, I kind of look around and go, this is more of the same. And that's why I think it's important for me as a fan. You're talking about Q&As. Anytime a Q&A happens at a panel, I walk out. Every single time. Because they're going to get a bunch of weird questions. They're going to be overly specific. I mean, I'll stand in lines with people and they'll tell me about, did you read this book in Star Wars and so-and-so had this brother? And boom, I'm out. I just tell them I'm a movie fan. So I'm primarily a movie fan. That's why I moved to Los Angeles. Probably mostly because of Star Wars and the age of the blockbuster. I want to work as an editor in feature films. This is all because of my fandom. So the fandom actually can pay off. Like, it can give you the energy and motivation. I know you work at a movie studio. I used to work in a movie studio. I still kind of work in the back end of it. Just think about how that fandom paid off for you. Mm-hmm. I mean, people meet their wives at these things. They meet tons of friends. And I think that's the underrated part of fandom. Because if you look at fandom as just you're obsessing over something all the time. And I kind of do, mostly watching YouTube stuff and going to conventions, but that only adds up to 5 or 6 times a year, 10 movie nights maybe. You have to look at what you're getting out of it. And if you're pursuing something, you're obsessed with something, this may be what you're talking about with the wrestling thing, because I was a wrestling fan too. And I don't really know the scene now. You took me to one, which I actually kind of enjoyed. But you're a fan, you're exhibiting fandom by going to these trips. Mm-hmm. But do you probably feel... Sounds like you feel a little bit obliged as rather than entertained at times.
I think now the WrestleMania trip, because WrestleMania weekend has grown so big from the first year that we went, which was 10 years ago, WrestleMania 22 in Chicago, there was the Hall of Fame ceremony and WrestleMania for WWE. Mm. And then there was a Ring of Honor show. I think they did a Thursday or Friday and Saturday night show. Now it's WWE does... the Hall of Fame, the NXT, which is their minor league, WrestleMania, Raw, and SmackDown on Monday and Tuesday in the same town. Ring of Honor will do 2 shows. All the other independents that have sprung up since then. There's usually, I think this year, there were like 8 or 9 different independent shows. WWE does Fan Access, which is a 4-day convention type of its own. Then there's WrestleCon, which brings in people not associated with WWE, former wrestlers and everything. So it has just gotten to be so big that WrestleMania itself is kind of the least important aspect of WrestleMania weekend. Mm. It's more about that social interaction. It's about the experience and just the atmosphere. So going back into the fandom, two questions that I had while you were talking was, one, do you think your fandom, do you have blind loyalty to your fandom, or are you critical, are you able to be critical, or do you just, because of the fandom, accept whatever is out there?
Yeah. And
there was a movie that came out a few years ago called One for the Money. I don't know if you ever saw it. Katherine Heigl, based on a very popular book series.
No, I haven't had the pleasure.
Okay, it's a horrible movie. The books are entertaining. They're kind of light, fluffy. It's about a female bounty hunter in New Jersey. Katherine Heigl's production company got the rights, produced it. Wow. It was bad. It was horribly miscast.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I won't name a name, but a friend said, well, the fans should just be happy that they got the movie, that she was willing to do it, because otherwise they wouldn't have gotten the movie.
Mm.
And my, you know, response was, no, you should, if you are a fan of it, you should expect the movie to be true to the book, as true as it can be.
Yeah.
But so I'm saying, like, let's go with Guardians of the Galaxy, which you said wasn't, you know, isn't a well drawn book, isn't a well drawn story.
No.
If they would have made a movie similar to the comic book, would you have been like, okay, well, it's a Marvel movie, it's good, or would you have said, wow, this is horrible?
Yeah, it's a good question. I think with Guardians of the Galaxy, when I saw the trailer, I was posting on Facebook, this does not look good. And it's based on my experience, limited experience reading the comic books. I didn't like what I saw in the trailer. I didn't get it. And that's why that is a phenomenon for me, because what I saw was so much better than what I had in my mind. But I say right now, I don't know the exact ratio, but I hate about half of the comic movies that are out. I hate everything DC's doing. I hated Iron Man 2, Iron Man 3, both reboots of the Spider-Man, every Fantastic Four, half of the X-Men's. I wasn't blown away by Logan like everybody was. I really liked it, but I wasn't blown away by it like every critic seemed to be. So for me, the Wolverine movies are mostly horrible, the originals. I like Deadpool. So if I was putting this on a chart, I think I dislike more than I like. But what you notice probably with me on Facebook is I run very hot and cold on things. So I'll act like this is the most amazing thing ever. And people will be like, Eric, you always act like this movie's a 1 and this movie's a 10. That's how my fandom runs. Either I'll travel to a convention to see a panel on something, or I'm not interested at all. So I am pretty critical. I don't necessarily post about every... I avoid a lot of them, too, that I'm not interested in either. So I think fans... And maybe this is... I'm guilty of this on a Star Wars level, but fans, DC fans in particular, are giving bad movies a pass. And this hopefully answers your question. They're not being critical. Mm-hmm. Now, even the movies that are kind of average or slightly above average for Marvel, they're not great movies. Like Captain America 2, I didn't... Winter Soldier, everyone loved it. I thought it was average. Avengers 2, very average, does not hold up. Well-intentioned. But those are kind of misfires. And I think for a fan to say, well, at least you got something, there's some validity in that. Like, if you're interested, you can check it out. If it doesn't work for you, if you hear it's bad, don't go. That's one thing I would say about fandom, is that if people don't want to be assaulted by Marvel, Star Wars, DC, and it is everywhere, you know, the merchandising is extreme, you can't avoid it. It could be very annoying if you're not a fan. But you don't have to participate in any of those things. In fact, if you go to a bunch of them, you don't like them, I just say stop going to them. You know, because I stopped watching wrestling. I lost interest in the NBA when my Sonics moved to Oklahoma City. So I was actually able to unplug huge threads of my fandom based on something dying or moving away. And I've transitioned mostly into these, you know, I guess Disney kind of owns my consciousness right now. But I can be very critical. In fact, I really pick and choose the movies I watch. But I'll definitely acknowledge, specifically with Star Wars, I'm putting a lot of it aside, just hoping for a lightsaber. And Disney's clearly playing on that. They're bringing the old sounds back, the old visuals back. So I'm giving that much more of a pass than it probably deserves. But it gives me so much enjoyment. That's the trade-off. I'm kind of looking the other way on some stuff, but then they're getting some stuff right. And then I'm walking out totally entertained for $18. So that's my measure. Am I entertained? Am I fooling myself on a certain level? Probably at times during The Force Awakens. And Rogue One had a pretty bad first hour, and then I think it redeemed itself in the second hour, but the two leads aren't good. And that's, so you're doing mental gymnastics when you say, well, leads in the movie aren't good, but it's Star Wars. That's what I'm doing. Because they're doing just enough at times, or a little bit more, to make me kind of forget about the other part. So yeah, I guess with Star Wars, I'm kind of the most forgiving when it comes to that because of my reverence for it.
Okay, and by working in the entertainment industry, mm-hmm. do you find maybe you're overly critical of films because you know what goes into them? You know how much money, how many people have a say in what finally gets put onto a screen? Or are you less critical because you know how much goes into it, so that, you know, when by the time a script goes from an awesome first draft to the 10th draft that 20 people have put notes on, you're like, well, how can it remain good?
That's a good question. I think when I was younger, I was very critical of movies because my favorite decade is the 70s, hands down. I mean, not just the decade I grew up in, but even the adult movies in the 70s. Mm-hmm. Cuckoo's Nest, Apocalypse Now, Godfather. Like, when the studios kind of let some of the auteurs alone and they were able to create stuff, and they happened to all be good auteurs for the most part, the films were fantastic. So I used to bag on movies. I was pretty snarky when I was 18 and 20. I worked at a movie theater that only showed artsy movies, and I would... And I think as I've gotten older, I've definitely gotten softer about taking shots at movies. I basically go there, try to lower my expectations, make before the movie with friends or after fun, and the movie, if it pays off, it's wonderful. I don't see everything that's out. I probably see about 10 to 15 movies in the movie theaters per year. And I've generally lowered, not lowered my bar, but kind of lowered my expectations to where I just try to have fun. And if the movie surprises me, it's great. And I think that is working the industry. You kind of see that the studios are putting out soft drinks. They're putting out all these products, and then a few of them are going to land in your memory, and most of them are disposable. However, I don't take the cynical view that most movies are garbage, that most sequels are garbage. Most Hollywood has no originality, retreads. Everything's... I don't agree with that at all. I think there's too many people going to these things and having fun for them. If you believe the prevailing thought that it's all garbage or recycled, then why is everyone showing up all the time? And why are people sleeping at conventions? Why? They're getting something right. And whether or not people acknowledge that, that's on their taste not to acknowledge it. So with DC, I guess the only problem I would have if I'm contradicting myself is I don't understand how DC is paying off. Other than those fans are starved for those characters to be on a screen. They're putting everything aside when they watch Batman vs. Superman or Suicide Squad.
I was going to say, that goes back to DC has name brand mm-hmm. characters that people are familiar with. So you can throw the name Batman or Superman up on a marquee and people are going to go based on just knowledge, which I think is part of Hollywood's problem, is they want name brand recognition to drive people into a theater.
Oh, I agree. And I would say, too, one thing I've noticed just watching movies ever since I was a kid is that it goes back to my kind of different types of fandom is that, and also my theories about balancing your life in certain ways, and fandom isn't really a balance, but sometimes I get burned out watching movies. Sometimes there's people that go on Netflix and they just, I'm watching season one, season two, season three. That's an obsession. That's a fandom. For me, like if I start binging on Netflix too much or I see a bunch of average summer movies, the summer movies are kind of loud and noisy and cut very quickly. I say pick up a book. I listen to a lot of podcasts. I mean, you're running a podcast now. I'm interested in running a podcast. So I listen to political and philosophical podcasts. I also listening to Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy. Again, I've listened to it many times. Read by Stephen Fry. And then when I get, okay, I've done enough of that, then I might watch a little bit of news. Then I watch some satire. Then I organize a movie event. Then I go, hey, there's a convention over here. Then I turn on The Walking Dead. Then I go on Sideshow and I go, what new collectible is out? And then at the end of the night, I start playing video games. And then every Sunday, I usually go into virtual reality. I'm watching a little bit of the NBA playoffs. I think that's kind of the key is to have I think you can get a little bit burned out or jaded. Mm-hmm. This goes to Hollywood. Comic movies could be sports. I kind of got burned out on sports a while back. Seahawks had a rough season, so I was a little up and down on that. But I think bouncing around and having different interests or taking a break. Mm-hmm. Like, people get burned out on social media. I say, well, stop going on social media. Like, I Facebook a lot at work or that. But there's some people that are very obsessive about it, and they're kind of on it all the time. And they get outraged and irritated. And maybe just switch up your entertainment, you know. Or maybe take a vacation and don't... and go to a beach, you know. Or go to do an outdoorsy thing. Mix it up a little bit.
No, I think that actually relates to why my fandom over the last couple of years with film has died. Because I think it was about 3 years ago now, I had MoviePass, which for anyone that doesn't know is like Netflix for the theater. You pay a monthly subscription and you can see a movie every day. It's just a different movie every day. So I put that, you know, I wanted to see how much value I could get out of a $30 a month membership. And I ended up seeing, I think, 250 films in 1 year.
There's your problem right there.
And I think I just saw I saw so many. And I saw that the Hollywood, the studio films are very formulaic.
Mm-hmm,
And so the movies that I actually enjoyed were the ones that I had no idea what they were. They're the smaller budget films that you never hear about. But I was like, it's technically free. I'm going to go see this movie. And And I remember one time I saw a movie. It was called From the Head. It's, I believe it's available on Amazon Prime. It's about a New York strip club bathroom attendant in the 90s. And the guy who stars in it, wrote it, directed it, was a New York strip club bathroom attendant.
Wow.
And I go to the theater, and before the movie is shown, the manager comes in. He's like, oh, the director's going to be here after the, you know, afterwards do a Q&A if he wants to ground. There were four people in the theater.
Hmm.
It was myself, the guy who runs the New Art Theater here in Santa Monica, and then the one of the actors from the film, and the director's friend who got him a job as the bathroom attendant.
Intimate.
Yeah, it was intimate. And it was, I mean, it was interesting listening to him tell the story. And it's a good movie because it takes place, 98% of the movie takes place in the bathroom. So it's just the clientele of the strip club that come into the bathroom. It's,
oh, kind of like Taxi Cab Confessions in a stall.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So it's very interesting. So that, and then a movie called Contiki, which...
Oh, I've seen that.
Okay.
I think. Refresh my memory.
It's a narrative film based on a film that won Best Documentary, I think, around 54, 55.
It was the boat, the voyage?
It's about a European scientist who has a theory that the Polynesian islands were settled by South Americans, not Asians. And so he gets a team together, they build a raft, and sail from Peru to see if they can make
it. Yeah, they do the old wooden style island sailing using only winds and all that. Yeah.
Yeah, so these are like two movies that I'd never
Swedish,
heard of.
Norwegian.
Yeah, I believe the Swedish. Two films I'd never heard of, but I just went and saw them. And they were so different from what was in, you know, the multiplex. So yeah, I think you have a very valid point in when you get burned out with something, instead of trying to force that fandom back onto it, take the time away and go see, you know, be more critical or more, what's the word I'm looking for?
Discerning.
Discerning, yeah. Choose wisely.
Oh, yeah, or in fact, maybe, again, I don't, maybe this is just hopping around, but like, and I know you've gone to concerts before, and maybe go to a play, like a really good dramatic play. I used to kind of not even attend more than maybe one a year, and now I go to a couple, and if I pick ones that are interesting or ones that have good actors, and some of them are Hollywood actors, they can be very good. Mm-hmm. But yeah, and I know when I was doing my Oscar party, my prep is that I actually watched everything that was nominated. I got really burned out. I got... Mm-hmm. A lot of the movies have this very dramatic, slow, tragic type thing. And I kind of like, why am I doing this? That's the bad part of fandom, which occasionally at a convention, I'll be like, I don't want to be in this line anymore. So I'm wrestling. Do I want to keep doing this? And then I snap back into it. But there might be a day where I don't want to do it anymore as I get older. And I don't want to probably sit in a line for 6 hours in the sun. Mm-hmm. And I think we are kind of, wouldn't say we're fooling ourselves, but this could go to wrestling. Maybe in 10 years, you just stop going to WrestleManias. Mm-hmm. I might stop going to conventions in 5 to 10 years. But then as long as you can pick something else up, it could be reading, could be hiking, I think it's fine. But you just have to kind of listen to yourself with fandom. It is easy to get burned out, for sure.
Okay, and last point, and going back about 20 minutes, on the social aspect of fandom, over the last, probably since Marvel really kicked it into high gear, geek culture, as it's known, has become mainstream. You have the success of The Big Bang Theory, which started out being about geeks and now has nothing to do with being about geeks whatsoever. Yeah. Has that, from your point of view, being a fan for the last 30, 40 years, how has that changed fandom at conventions or at films that you go to that, you know, before when you were in the minority and now you're in the minority of being the person who's been there the longest and not just someone who threw on a Flash shirt because you saw it at Target for $10.
Well, I think there's definitely some problems with merchandising and targeting children with all this stuff. And in just in terms of what Disney does or what Marvel does is they're trying to suck those kids into it forever. They should let the stories kind of speak for themselves. But I think I see everything in terms of fandom as a net positive. So when I was growing up, I was made fun of. I was bullied. I used to have to read my comic book in between a textbook. I would have to hide it so that the kids wouldn't see it or girls wouldn't see it. So even though there's fans that are maybe jumping on the bandwagon or getting to it late, they didn't pay those type of dues. They're still having fun. They're still bringing energy to the conventions. They're spending money, stimulating the economy. They're nothing but smiles over this stuff. So everything I kind of went in as far as an experience when I was a kid, except Star Wars was very popular. Like, it was never not cool to like Star Wars when I was growing up. That transcended everything. Mm-hmm. But comic books were kind of geeky. And I think that now that people are actually reading, and I think fandom also extends to stuff like Harry Potter, they're reading 600-page books about wizards. Well, they're gaining vocabulary. They're gaining study habits as far as reading something and being disciplined to finish it. And there's no net negative to any... Like, there's no negative other than maybe the crass marketing and targeting of children I see to any fandom. But yeah, it wasn't cool when I was into a lot of this stuff. Now that's cool. Now you could take a cynical view and you could say, well, those guys either didn't pay their dues or they're just hopping on because it's popular. I think there's a number of those people that are bandwagon fans. You find them on conventions, you talk to them for 5 minutes. I don't expect them to know everything about The Flash going back 40 years. But you can tell they just know nothing. They just turned it on. But my argument has always been, what's wrong with that? Like, if they fell into liking something and all of a sudden they're instantly absorbing it, who knows how long it'll last, but it's bringing them fun and excitement as long as they don't get obsessed with it. You know, that's one, another bad side of fandom is that, and I'm a collector, is like, I was buying a lot of collectibles, so I'm spending thousands and thousands of dollars. If you take too many trips to the convention, well, then my house may be falling apart. My wife might be like, what are we doing here? Our washer doesn't work. So there's a negative side to getting too extreme with it, but I would say the difference between being an older fan and a newer fan, we like the same things. There's not much of a difference, except it wasn't cool when I was growing up. It is now. And I kind of like that people aren't being bullied for liking the same things I like, because I was bullied. So to me, it's a net positive. There's just no negative aspect to it, except you can look at shows like The Big Bang Theory and all that as kind of taking a very superficial... Again, this is what we talked about, the socialization and having different interests. And the kind of experiences, we'll do the Comic-Con panel kind of discussion at one point, but there's so much that goes into it rather than just liking something. So when fans are portrayed on TV and in the media, they're just nerds that pile up in lines. They're just stereotypes. They're just, they show them and then they might show some women that are scantily clad as cosplayers. And that's the narrative. Like, check out these girls, check out these geeks. What are they doing? What's going on, you know, but there's so much that goes into that. Just talk to the people that are there and you'll find out they're very nice, normal, for the most part, interesting, highly intelligent, creative people. And a lot of them are professionals in the industry. So maybe you have a job you don't like. Well, work at a movie studio. I bet you it's a better job than you may have had before. You know, it's interesting.
Very good points. All right, well, before we leave, since I don't have a random question of the week, I'm just going to pull two questions out and ask you randomly that actually deal with fandom.
Cool.
And that is, if you could make any comic book into a movie, which one, what comic book hasn't been made yet that you would like to see?
Oh, easy. Well, they screwed up Dark Knight Returns. That would have been my choice, but they kind of botched that with Batman vs. Superman. But the one that hasn't been done, hasn't been approached, and I think is being developed. So I don't know if this is a great answer, but I've thought about this ever since I was in high school, is Ronin by Frank Miller. And it's a sci-fi story. It probably requires a huge budget. I think it's being developed. I'm not sure if it's on or off right now. But it has an unbelievable story. And it's probably Frank Miller's best thing. I think he wrote it when he was in high school. Okay. So Ronin, and I encourage any listener who wants a list of maybe the most interesting comic books ever made. And we know the popular ones. Dark Knight Returns, The Killing Joke, Alan Moore stuff, Watchmen, for Vendetta. Check out Ronin by Frank Miller. No one really knows it or talks about it, but that's the one I would pick, hands down.
Alright. And then last question is, after Ben Affleck's contract is up, who should be Batman?
Oh my god. There was a guy on Magic Mike who was in, I heard was in the running to be Batman. He goes out with the woman that's on... Oh, what's that sitcom with...
Is Modern Family? Are you talking...
Yeah, Modern Family.
What is his name?
You know what I'm talking about?
I know who you're talking about. He's in the new Pee Wee Herman movie.
He is?
Yeah.
Well, his name escapes me, so... Yeah. Joe Mangiello or something? I might be botching his name, but that guy's Batman. But I've always said this, like, Chris Evans is Captain America. You need a guy who's going to play Batman. He's 6'4", 6'5". He's got to be huge. Christian Bale, not so good. Michael Keaton, farthest thing away. Ben Affleck has the size, but I don't think he has any range. And the movies are so dopey. He was supposed to be the director of Batman. He backed out. That thing may possibly be a mess. I hope it isn't. He physically looks the part. So hopefully he can go away, unless DC does it right. But Joe is the guy I would pick for Batman. He looks, sounds, he's funny. He's big enough to play Batman.
Okay, interesting choice. All right, well, thanks for joining us here this week on Positive Cynicism. I'm sure we will have you back. We might have to do a Comic-Con.
Oh, yeah, I'd love that.
Episode, maybe just come down. Right now, I don't have passes, but, you know, you can always just show up in San Diego and hang out outside and people watch and talk to the people around. But, stay tuned. I hope you enjoy Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2. And as always, question everything, do something.
This is a production of the Jittery Monkey Podcast Network. For more jittery shenanigans, go to jitterymonkey.com.